Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here is the difference between the benedictions awarded by the demigods and those awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Devotees of demigods ask for benedictions simply for sense gratification, and therefore they have been described in Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as bereft of intelligence. Kama istaya hitta jnana prapadyante anyadevataha tamstam niyamam astaya prakritya niyata svaya. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Conditioned souls are generally bereft of intelligence because of profound desires for sense gratification. They do not know what benedictions to ask. Therefore, non-devotees are advised in the Shastras to worship various demigods to achieve material benefits. For example, if one wants a beautiful wife, he is advised to worship Uma or Goddess Durga. If one wants to be cured of a disease, he is advised to worship the sun god. All requests for benedictions from the demigods, however, are due to material lust. The benedictions will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation along with those who bestow them. If one approaches Lord Vishnu for benedictions, the Lord will give him a benediction that will help him return home back to Godhead. This is also confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti. Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna instructs a devotee who constantly engages in his service how to approach him at the end of the material body. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tatva deham punar janma naiti mam eti so arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is the benediction of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. After giving up his body, a devotee returns home, back to Godhead. A devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give him such benedictions, despite the devotee's prayers. Therefore, people who are very attached to material life do not generally become devotees of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they become devotees of demigods, kamaistai stayavita jnana prapadyante anyadevata. The benedictions of the demigods, however, are condemned in Bhagavad Gita, antavattu phalam tesham tad bhavati kropa medasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. A non-Vaishnava, one who is not engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered a fool with a small quantity of brain substance. So I'll read the text again. By the way, this is Lord Vishnu speaking to the demigods who have come to him for material benediction. So he's talking about them also. A pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. So this is physicians who have the benefit health of their patients in mind tell them to avoid certain things. So they say, please, you know, I just really like to eat so many things. And they say, no, you have to give up on this, you have to give up on that. You have high cholesterol, therefore you can't eat fried food. You have to stop eating meat and so on. So he would not be a very responsible physician if he granted the patient, go ahead, eat whatever you like, doesn't matter. And then the patient drops dead. So why doesn't Lord Vishnu give material benedictions? Because they're harmful. Because one becomes attached to material things, then he suffers. So people who are intelligent know that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita quite clearly that yehi samsparasaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. These enjoyments which come from the contact between the senses and the objects are the source of all suffering. People don't know this. They think it's pleasure, just as some people think that taking a roll of tobacco and put it in your mouth and lighting it and inhaling it is pleasure. They're convinced it's pleasure. And they do it even though they can see that it's actually the source of incredible suffering for everybody. And they do it anyway. So actually any material enjoyment is like that. It's a cause of suffering. Because it causes this pure soul who has nothing to do with this material world and with birth, death, old age and disease to acquire the false idea of himself as a material product and then to become implicated in history and in time and therefore suffer unbearable agonies, birth after birth after birth, all because of trying to enjoy this material nature. So it's the cause of all suffering. So why would Krishna help somebody suffer? So because he's kind, he does it. Therefore, as it said here, people who are desirous of various material things generally do not become worshippers of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they approach, as Krishna says here, Anya Devata, other gods. They approach the Devatas, various demigods, who are specialists in particular benedictions. You want good health, you worship the sun god. You're looking for a wife, you worship Uma. You want to become a big hero, you worship Lord Shiva. You want wealth, you worship the Vasus, and so on. So they're all different specialists that you can go to for this or that or the other thing. So they're listed like that. But Krishna very, and of course in India you find people are worshipping. Sometimes we get criticized, Indian people will come to our temple and they only see that we're worshipping Vishnu. They say, where's Ganesh, where's Shiva, where's Kali, and so on. But we're followers of Bhagavad Gita. Everybody in India says, oh, the Bhagavad Gita scriptures, wonderful literature, gives spiritual enlightenment. Well, here's what Krishna says. He says, those who worship demigods, Krishna's verdict is alpamedasam. That means they have, in Prabhupada says, small quantity of brain substance. That's what it means. Alpa medasam means meager brain. So then you say, oh, that, you know, judgmental and so on. But anyway, this is Krishna. We're not passing any judgment. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, alpa medasam. And he tells why. Why is that? Because the results are limited and temporary. What material benedictions, you're spending all your time after something that's temporary. Anyone who does that is considered a gyaya, as it says this verse, a gyaya, a fool, has no knowledge. And here again, hritta jnana, minds are distorted, they have distorted knowledge, it's twisted by material desires. That's the problem. So Krishna wants, at least, for people to become pure devotees. The actual benediction, nishreyasam, the supreme goal of life, not to get entangled with these temporary things. So he won't award these benedictions because it'll just hurt the living entities. What Krishna actually has to offer is pure devotional service, free from these things of karma and jnana, like that. So pure devotional service means that simply worship Krishna and don't take any notice of asking for any benedictions. The devotees should just assume that Krishna is competent to take care of everything I need, and there's no need to submit some list of petitions. Asking God for things in exchange for devotional service is not love, it's business. And everywhere people are trying to contract this business, it's like their insurance. They go to church and they think, if I go to church, if I give some percentage of income, then I've got a guarantee, or at least a hedge, that some disaster won't happen. So that's why they do that. That's why in Sanskrit, the sequence of aims of life is given as dharma, artha, kama, moksha. This is the actual sequence of these four. They're called purusharthas, ends of life. When I learned Hinduism in the university, they always gave a different sequence, which is interesting. The sequence was karma, kama, artha, dharma, moksha. And it was said to represent evolution of people's consciousness to higher and higher levels. First, the platform of sense gratification. First, you immediately gratify your senses. Then you get a little higher. Then you can get involved in economic development, pursuit of other things. Then you get a little higher. You come to the platform of religion. Then you come to the highest of all, moksha, liberation. But this sequence is not the actual sequence in all the literature. This sequence is actually invented by the Ramakrishna Mission for the purposes of propagating Mayavada philosophy. So the actual sequence is dharma, artha, kama, moksha. You begin with dharma. People are performing dharma. Means regulated activities according to the Vedas. Dharma, religious principles. Why do they perform religious principles? Artha, for the sake of getting money or wealth. Why do they want wealth? Kama. So they may gratify their senses. So that's the actual logical sequence. And then last thing, moksha. Why do they pursue moksha or liberation? When they become disgusted and unfulfilled by the first three, by sense gratification, then they look for liberation. So that we see everywhere, people are performing their dharma. They're going to churches and mosques and temples. Why? For wealth. And you'll see that when there's prosperity and sufficient economic development, the economy is doing well, nobody goes to church. As soon as there's some trouble, there's some disaster, there's some difficulty, then everyone's praying. When the benediction comes, then they quit. So this we see. So it's simply an arrangement. So this has... God is conceived of as the order supplier. His business is to gratify... He wants some deal. A lot of times people resent the deal. Why is it? Why doesn't he just give it to me? Why is it that sometimes if I don't go to church, if I don't give some money, if I don't obey certain difficult rules and regulations, that he's going to cut it off? So they actually resent it. But they're afraid. They're afraid that if I do something sinful, if I avoid doing some religious duties, then things are going to go wrong. And then, even if I avoid certain sins and do my religious duties, things go wrong anyway, then I decide there's no God. So it's all on the platform of just business deal. None of this has actual to do with developing love of God. Love of God means a devotee serves the Supreme Lord out of love. Love means I don't ask for anything in return. We have so many transactions in the material world, sometimes going under the name of love or affection, but they're not. They're also business arrangements. It's a contract. You gratify my senses, I'll gratify your senses. As soon as one or the other stops, then immediately the deal is off. We don't actually see so much real love in the material world. Prabhupada says, actually, almost always in every case, it's not actually love. There has to be some exchange. And it's not so selfless. You don't find so many people, say a public servant, that's what they say, a public servant. But you'll not find very many people will serve the public without in some recognition, without some return. They at least want a statue in the park. They at least want some recognition, some notes in the history book. They also have their demands. That's natural. But it's not love. So love is the desire to serve someone else without any demand whatsoever for an exchange. And this is seen in relationship with Krishna. The gopis in Vrindavan, according to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, this was their... They desired to serve Krishna and they didn't expect anything in exchange. Kama is the desire to have the other satisfy my senses. That's lust. But love is the desire to satisfy Krishna's senses. So that pure love for Krishna has to develop. Well, then you say, well, why should I want to do that? What's in it for me? Right away, that presupposes the platform of karma. What's in it for me? Why should we want to satisfy Krishna's senses without anything in exchange? Isn't that simply slavery? And that's, of course, what we're advocating in a way, huh? Slavery. Dasa means slave. You serve someone in the material world, there has to be expectation of something back in exchange for it. Otherwise, we go on strike, we find another employer, we complain to the government. But this notion of where I serve somebody and get nothing in exchange, that seems terrible. But of course, it's not the fact that when we serve Krishna, that there's nothing in exchange. But we should not serve Krishna in order to get something. Actually, what happens is when we actually love Krishna and serve Krishna, is there are so many side benefits, such as eternal life, full of bliss and full of knowledge. All kinds of things are side benefits. But the actual, what we get when we serve Krishna, is service to Krishna. That in itself is it's Nishreyasam. It is the highest possible benediction. It is not that service to Krishna, so then I can do something else. I may serve someone in the material world, but then want some benediction out of that service. So that's the highest thing. Not the service and not the person I'm serving, but the benediction that comes beyond that. But Krishna is the absolute truth. There is no higher person. And his service is the highest possible benediction. It is in itself intrinsically wonderful. And it is so wonderful that the devotee who serves Krishna feels ever-increasing transcendental bliss. If he serves Krishna in order to feel ever-increasing transcendental bliss, he won't feel it, because he will not be serving Krishna, at least not purely. But if he gives up all thought of his own happiness and simply is concerned entirely 100%, is Krishna happy? Is Krishna satisfied? Then the devotee automatically becomes fully satisfied. So it seems a little paradoxical. But the fact is, the more we think of our own satisfaction and of using everything else, God included, as an instrument, the less we will become satisfied. The less we think of our own satisfaction and try just to satisfy Krishna, the more we'll actually become satisfied. That's the way it works. So when the gopis serve Krishna without any desire for their own satisfaction, they could not understand that their happiness and their ecstasy was increasing more and more and more. Because they were in love with Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna was pleased, that to them was the highest pleasure. They felt ecstatic bliss whenever Krishna was pleased. And their service was selfless. For example, when Srimati Radharani, Krishna's dear most devotee, she would think that other gopis were more attractive than she was. And so she would make arrangements for those gopis to meet with Krishna. Because she was thinking they can serve him, they can satisfy him better than I can. So let me make arrangements for them. This is selfless. She's not the material world. A similar relationship. Say, wow, this one may be more attractive than I am. Therefore, will take my place. Let me make some politics to get rid of her. Or get her out of the way or something. Because in that case, I'm not thinking of pleasing the Master or Krishna. I'm thinking of pleasing myself, taking some position myself. But in spiritual life, it's selfless. Therefore, if someone is serving Krishna better than I am, let me help that person. Because I'm concerned about whether Krishna is satisfied, not what is my position. This is selflessness. And that's the indication of love. So our business is to develop pure love of Krishna, bhava. And I wanted to conclude with a few words on this. It's an interesting purport. That at the stage of development of Krishna consciousness, ecstasies are produced. Why is ecstasy there? Because it's natural. Again, if we are engaged in devotional service of Krishna consciousness in order to feel ecstasy, then again we're trying to use Krishna as a means for our own happiness. But the fact is that when we forget about our own happiness and begin to serve Krishna selflessly, that ecstasy automatically develops. Why? Because it's there. Why? Because Krishna's position is naturally ecstatic, and the living entities, as tiny particles of Krishna, are also naturally ecstatic. It's just the nature, such chit ananda. The nature of spirit is ananda, it's bliss. So all we have to do is act naturally. In the material world, everything we do based on sense gratification is unnatural. When we are serving Krishna, we're finally coming to our natural position and our real nature, which is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss, automatically becomes manifest. It is death that is unnatural. It is old age that is unnatural. It is disease that is unnatural. It is sense gratification of every kind that is unnatural. The material world is not our natural place. We belong in the spiritual nature, not really in the material nature. So our natural position is joyful. The ocean is salty. And every drop is also salty, even though it's only a small drop. So Krishna is full of bliss, and actually every little drop, every part and parcel of Krishna is also full of bliss. So, in the development of Krishna consciousness, at a certain point, ecstasy takes place. And Bhagavatam says, certainly that heart is steel-framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. These are symptoms of the stage of chanting called bhava. That these, they're called asta sattvika vikar. Eight. Asta means eight. Vikara means transformation, sattvika of purity. Ecstasy. He says here, these things take place. Being stopped as though dumb, perspiration, standing of the hairs in the end, failing in the voice, trembling, paleness, tears, trance, these kinds of external manifestations of the body take place. If the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. In the beginning of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reaction of feelings of separation ecstatic feelings like this will not be visible in the form of tears in the eyes and standing of heads in the end, standing of hair on the end. So this will take place as a natural sequence if one has actually properly performed devotional service. So then Prabhupada goes on to discuss the fact that people may imitate these. You get pseudo-devotees who want to give the impression of being advanced, and therefore they can imitate these symptoms for cheap appreciation. So what do we do? So he says, therefore, he says, but it will be seen to be imitated because people will not show other symptoms. Though that they may chant Hare Krishna and tears flow down their eyes, then when they're finished, they'll go and smoke a cigarette. But we see it in India like that. So that's the sign of imitation. Even though decorated with the signs of a devotee, a person addicted to smoking, drinking, or illegitimate sex cannot have all the above-mentioned ecstatic symptoms, Prabhupada says. And Prabhupada goes on to say, and sometimes also a devotee may be very advanced and suppress the symptoms. That shows not to make some public display. So although these asta sati gavikara are the signs of ecstasy, sometimes people are sufficiently advanced you won't see them, and other people who are not advanced will display them. So the question is, how do we really know when somebody is actually achieved love of God? So there's six other symptoms that have to be there, and that are in a way more important. They are as follows. The first one's called kshanti, that is the cessation of material desires. So these are actually the signs of bhava, ecstasy develops. This is seen. There will be the cessation of material desires. Shanti, steady bhava. Then avyartha kalatvam, which is the tendency to utilize every moment in the service of Krishna. A devotee who has actually developed bhava will be loath to see any time go by in which he is not engaged in Krishna's service. Then the third, namagane sada ruchi. The devotee will indicate the sign of being always eager to hear and chant about Krishna. This eagerness will be seen. Then pittistad vasanti stale will be very attracted to living in a place where the Lord has had his pastimes, like Vrindavan or Mathura, someplace like that. A deep attraction for living in such places. Then virakti. Virakti means that is detached from material happiness. Not interested. It comes or goes, but is in no case interested. Virakti. And mana shunyata. That means devoid of pride. Humble. Pridelessness. Mana shunyata. Devoid of pride. So these, Prabhupada says, one who has developed all these transcendental qualities is really possessed of the bhava stage as distinguished from the stone-hearted imitators of mundane followers. So these are the symptoms of someone who's actually pure, who has become free from material desires and has achieved the highest goal of life. And that's the benediction that Krishna wants to give. The prayer that Rupa Goswami offered to Lord Chaitanya says that you're the most liberal, the most munificent of all incarnations of Krishna. Call him Varanya, Mahavaranya. Why Krishna prema pradayate? Because you are giving Krishna prema, pure love of Krishna. Not some material benediction, not even the benediction of liberation, but the benediction of pure love of Krishna. So therefore you're liberal. You're freely giving it out, which no one else has ever given before, Krishna prema. That's what's being offered by Lord Chaitanya and by Srila Prabhupada coming after him. So we should take advantage of this and not get sidetracked by any other opportunities that present themselves for any kind of material enjoyment or even spiritual accomplishment. Neither of those things are worth wasting our time on. Not when Krishna prema is available. And it is actually very easily available if we set our mind to doing that. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Can you go into a little more detail about karma, artha,
not karma, kama.
Kama, artha.
Yeah, so first one is dharma. This is the actual sequence. Dharma means the activities that are presented in the Vedas. Your duties. The duties of varna and ashram. The duties that you have to perform as enjoined in Shastra. Why do people perform these? This dharma? These are called the purusharthas. Artha means the goals or ends or valuable things in human life. Because of artha. So artha means wealth, prosperity. So people perform these for the sake of prosperity. Why do they want prosperity? Kama. There's really not a whole lot of sense gratification without money. People generally have a hard time gratifying their desires unless they can pay for it. Right? I think that's, everybody acknowledges this thing. So that's the first one. Then the other one offered in the, so the Vedas tell you dharma, tells you artha, tells you kama, and then it also tells, because these are four things that the Vedas, then the fifth goal, moksha. If having tried for so long to gratify your senses in this way in the material world, you still find you are unhappy, then you are a candidate for moksha, liberation. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that there's a fifth purushartha, that's Krishna prema, which is higher than moksha. But generally, these are the four purusharthas. So what else can I say?
So the Vedas recommend this, or this is...
They teach them. The Vedas are called for... Remember, Veda means just book of knowledge. So it's recognized. For example, we go out in the streets, or we even said people come, we preach pure devotional service. How many people want it? Krishna says after out of many thousands of people, hardly one will be interested in attaining perfection. And of those who attain perfection, that is liberation, hardly one of those knows me. This is in Bhagavad Gita. This is a discouraging statistic. So what to do with all those people who are not interested? They come to the human form of life and they're not interested. They're interested in kama, sense gratification. So the Vedic culture gives a plan for gradual elevation of these people life after life. Therefore, it teaches restricted sense gratification and all these things. So it's called a kalpa viksha. A desire tree is the tree that gives you any fruit you want. You go to the Vedas. You want a beautiful wife? Here's how you get one. But it does it in a certain way that gradually you will become spiritually elevated. It takes time. If you at least go to the demigods for your material desires, and satisfy these desires within certain restrictions. You won't commit any gross sinful activities, and you will at least have learned that you're dependent on some kind of higher powers for your well-being. That's doing better than the grabbing and growl method of modern civilization.
And that means modern civilization doesn't go through these steps.
No. No. There's no dharma. This is what the four purusharthas, these are the things that are given in the Vedas, in Vedic civilization. They're even trying for karma without even economic development. The only one that's left is practically karma. Economic development means credit.
What would be the difference between, say, some life member coming, you know, put some money in the deity box, praying and walking out and worshiping the demigod? Is that the same type of thing?
No, he's worshiping Krishna. But he's doing it for a material benediction. And he may be considered that Krishna is just one of the demigods. But that's also on the platform of fruit of work. But better he's approached Krishna, because Krishna will work for his ultimate good, whereas a demigod will give him bad things. Like Lord Shiva sometimes gives people things that are really bad for them. But Krishna will never do that.
Okay. Yeah. For a materialist who doesn't know anything about the demigods, since Krishna isn't fulfilling his material desires, who is?
Well, Krishna is. Even with the demigods fulfill your material desires, Krishna's behind the scenes pulling the strings. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. But usually they're fulfilling their material desires in an entirely unlawful way. Therefore they're called vikarmis. They will suffer bad results. Whereas one fulfills his material desires in a lawful way, at least he's a karmi. That means he won't go down into the lower regions of the universe or into the animal species of life. But behind the scenes, it's always Krishna, super soul, making these arrangements. You're...
Yeah, the person performs devotional service, nothing has desires, material desires, that's not exactly his goal of devotional service, but nonetheless, all these things come to him, even without his endeavor, like money or prestige. Material things. Mm-hmm. Even I was reading in the fifth canto, Krishna was giving out donations like that to different devotees and pleasing.
Yeah.
So how does a devotee, how does he deal with that? Seems like that presents a problem.
Yeah, and actually, if it will present a problem, if Krishna is really kind, he'll not give it. The devotee has to use these things in Krishna's service. Prabhupada said there's no problem being famous if you're famous as a devotee. You know. But as soon as one takes credit for it, or utilizes the facilities that Krishna gives him for sense gratification, then he's in trouble. And he can not only stop making progress, but fall down. So any benediction that comes from Krishna to a devotee, and you need resources like that if you want to spread Krishna consciousness. But as soon as we think that now it's mine, it belongs to me, now I'm this, I'm that, I have money, I'm famous, you know, or Krishna singled me out for this, the other thing, we're doomed. We're just doomed. We cannot take possession. One always has to remain. Therefore, a devotee has to become, this is the mana sunyata, mana sunyata, has to be private. And, not cover ourselves with borrowed plumage, that it belongs to Krishna. And we should always think of ourselves as being simply mercy cases. And that it's by Krishna's will or the mercy of the spiritual master that we can do this thing. But on our own account, we have achieved nothing. And as soon as we become... Well, there's a story of Prabhupada about the yogi. You know, as soon as you become puffed up about it, again you become a mouse. So we should always be thinking, I am the mouse. and I haven't accomplished anything.
Yeah. I can understand worshiping Krishna for some gross material thing. Could you discuss a little bit about desires for jnana? Because prophets so often part of the completely form of life is men.
Wow, boy, you run that time. Voice from Prabhupada.